Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here for the final expectation show of this season, this off-season, I'll say, with camp starting tomorrow. I'm recording this on the 22nd of July. We'll do the expectations today for Malachi Starks and Joe Noteboom. Apologies to Ed Norris. We're having some technical difficulties today. He was supposed to do this. I know he really enjoys doing shows about safeties and whatnot, but we couldn't get his gear to work, so I'm having to do this solo, and sometimes that's just the way it goes. Sorry about that, Ed. Thanks for your effort on this. So we'll start, as we do always, with the undercard, and that's Joe Noteboom. Believe it or not, there's an undercard to a rookie after having a seven-year career with the Rams, during which he played about 2,500 career snaps, 2,491 to be exact, including 111 in the postseason. So he's not a guy without postseason experience. He's never played a lot of snaps in a season, but he has your prototypical left tackle size at 6'5", 321, 34 and 3/8-inch arms, but way back in his combine days. Signed his backup tackle insurance here, something the Ravens really need on this team, and they have grown to need it more with the recent news that Emory Jones will enter camp on the NFI list. Now, let's address that really quickly, because this is a big concern for the Ravens' depth. I think Joe Noteboom would have been the first guy off the bench no matter what at offensive tackle, but Emory Jones may not play this year. And more importantly, they've put him on NFI not because it gives them an advantage on the 90-man roster. It does not. During that time, he still counts against that. But when the season starts, if he's on NFI, he does not count against the 53. And the advantage is, the small advantage gained, is that he does not count against the additional two men that can be on IR DTR. So he effectively, with an NFI status, were that to persist until the regular season begins, he would then be allowed to stay there. And he'd have to start, I believe he'd have to be there for at least the first 4 weeks if he starts the year there, like an IR player, but then he can return and practice and then play during this season. I think they're still hoping for that, but this may be a case where the situation does not resolve itself and Emory Jones is out for the entire year. If so, the Ravens have taken a fairly serious blow to their depth, both on the interior and at offensive tackle. So you now are talking about, you know, Nick Samak maybe being the 10th offensive lineman, having a much better shot to make the team, where it was looking a little dubious before, like he might have to be on the practice squad. So Noteboom, his role is now magnified in terms of its importance and what he provides the Ravens in terms of backup tackle insurance. If you look at who is the third left tackle for the Ravens, the answer is probably Roger Rosengarten, with somebody else moving in at right tackle. Perhaps it could be either Ben Cleveland. It could be a Corey Bullock. But Carson Vinson will be taking up a roster spot for the entire season. And the reason for that is fairly simple. The Ravens, if they cut Carson Vinson, will lose him. If they IR him, then he'll lose the benefit of on-field practice for the entire year. I don't think they want to do either of those things, and it just happens to be one of the costs of having a developmental tackle on your roster is that you have to have a roster spot assigned to the guy. Now, this is a very deep team, and provided they don't end up with a lot of walking wounded, they won't really feel the pressure, I don't think, tremendously in terms of game day activations. It'll actually be kind of a relief to have a kind of an automatic game day deactivation in the personage of Vincent. But Vincent was there to learn, and it would be a darn shame if the Ravens lost some portion of his training, even if he could continue in the classroom. On field and just watching what I have of practice so far, there's definitely a buy-in and a relationship building between Warhop and Vincent. And I'd like to see that bear fruit this season as he's on the roster. He probably actually will not play for the Ravens until 2027. If I had to guess, 2025 and 26, both honestly look like developmental years. Now, it could be, if they really love what they see, he could become Noteboom's. He could take Noteboom's role next year. And Noteboom obviously only signed for 1 year. Joe signed for $2 million. It's fully guaranteed. There was a portion of a signing bonus and a portion of his salary. Doesn't matter. It's $2 million fully guaranteed. And we've talked about some of the things otherwise with Emory Jones. Noteboom has quite a lot of variation of result in his background. He, like many UFA offensive tackles, he really hasn't been very good recently. So in recent years with the Rams, he's just been pretty meh. But that's what you get at your third tackle. And as we talk about fairly often, the size and shape pool for offensive tackles is very small. So you don't have a lot to choose from, and you usually end up with a guy who has nothing particularly strong in terms of past results. Noteboom is actually probably on the better side of that, you know, lesser group, if you wanted to talk about it that way. So a guy who I think the Ravens have got about as good as you can get for a backup tackle. Not as good as they had last year, though, when they had Josh Jones and McCary available to play, and that was really a better situation. And this year, obviously, you know, being short a man means that Rosengarten may be forced to left tackle if something were to happen, both Stanley and Noteboom. So anyway, hopefully we will not see how that plays out. You know, sometimes I go that way. Noteboom is a better run blocker than pass blocker in the last three seasons per PFF. We've talked about that, that they're getting the direction of the results, no doubt, correct. We may not agree on the magnitude of the mistakes that he's making, but that's not exactly what you want out of your offensive tackle. You would prefer to have a better pass blocker than run blocker at that position, for sure. The run blocking responsibilities are de-emphasized. Pass blocking responsibilities are under a microscope when you're on the blind side like that. So what makes a good season for Joe Noteboom? Well, I think he's available as a backup. He's active for 15-plus games, and Joe Noteboom is a guy who will never be inactive. He'll have some role probably on the kicking team to play somewhere along the line on the kicking team, because that's what the backup offensive linemen typically are involved in directly. He's never called upon due to some combination of the health of two starters and the health and play of Emory Jones. I actually wrote this a while ago. I think the health and play of Emory Jones is in, obviously, a very significant question at this point. So if Emory Jones has to basically hit the exacta at this point of being healthy enough to play and playing well enough in practice that the Ravens decide he's the guy over Joe Noteboom at this point, I don't see that as being a reasonable possibility anymore. I think his only significant action comes on the field goal team, played that, and he plays less than 200 snaps in mop-up and garbage time at offensive tackle. They'll get him sometime. It might be, I don't foresee that they'd use him as a sixth offensive lineman when they have guards that'll do it, and they really want to keep a player like Noteboom now in bubble wrap for the season to make sure he's available for the thing they need him for, which is to play left tackle in case there's an emergency. So I think they'll be very careful with him as the season goes on. A great season. Let's move on to that. I think it wouldn't be great for the Ravens if this happened, but he's active and he's forced into action for 4-plus games due to an injury to Rosengarten or Stanley. He plays 250-plus snaps at a level that is only slightly worse than the league average. I would not expect him to be a league average offensive lineman at this point in his career. If he hasn't been recently, then he probably won't be, in the next year or two. The Ravens weigh him among other backup options for 2026. Now, there'll be at least three that they'll be looking at, so he'll just be weighed among those options, even in the case of a very good season. But option number one would be Vincent progresses very quickly and is ready to go. Option number two, and this actually is also option 1B, if you want to call it that, is that Emory Jones is ready to go and can play inside or outside. They need him on the outside. They use him on the outside kind of thing. He might be ahead of Vincent seriously for 26, but it would be a better outcome for the Ravens if Vincent was ready to go at left tackle in 26. And the third option is they go back to the draft and they get another guy. The Ravens won't really have room next year for another developmental tackle, but they might be able to take a guy who can play right tackle, who has some physical limitations at the left tackle spot. And if they did that, then they'd have to be sure that they have a second guy, whether that's Vincent or Jones, ready to go next year to play on the left side. So it's actually a complex problem. They, more than anything, they really need Ronnie Stanley to be healthy for 2 full years. His contract is for $44 million for 2 years. You can think of it as having a $16 million team option for that third year that could have a lot of value to the Ravens. That could also be they're ready to move on and through some combination of Stanley's play and Stanley's cost that might make it worthwhile for the team to move on in 2027. But the Ravens, because it's this enviable situation of having both tackles tied up nominally for 3 years, which puts the Ravens in a position to have a backup tackle at all on the roster. It's a luxury that a lot of teams just can't afford to handle on their 53. Obviously, as we talked about, once you let them off the 53, particularly one of the size and shape guys like Vincent, you're going to lose him to somebody who will take that same developmental risk. All right, well, let's move on. Talk about Malachi Starks a little bit. 6'1", 192, 450, 40. Got nice long arms for a safety at 31 5/8. He turns 22 not until November. So he's a young player, played 3 years at Georgia, all starting years. That alone is a great accomplishment. He does kind of have a cornerback's frame at the safety position, which is a mild concern. Now, Starks, as you know, at Georgia, played a lot of different positions. He played more of a Kyle Hamilton move-around role, played a fair amount of slot corner. So it's kind of a thought of as being a hybrid there, played both safety positions. And he hasn't really been the specialist that I expect the Ravens will ask him to be. So he's a guy who, may have had some of his troubles in college coverage, and he did not have a good coverage year in his junior year, I should say, his last year in college. And some of that was due to playing slot corner and being asked to take some one-on-one matchups versus guys who were a little faster than him, or a little quicker and twitchier than he was. He's very smart. It's apparent immediately at the podium, the way he processes football. It is easy to see why the Ravens fell in love with this guy during the interview process. He does not approach a situation with a lot of hubris. He has, an analytic kind of a look at things, and you're dealing with an extremely intelligent defensive back. And I think he'll be not only a great teammate initially, but a great leader in the future. And that much is clear. I mean, I think that hopefully, and this is an ideal situation in all sports, but your best leadership comes from your best players. So you really want a guy who's a great leader. You'd prefer he be a great player, a great leader who is a bad player. And the Orioles have had those, and the Ravens have had those in the past. But I'll pick on the Orioles here for a minute. One of the guys who was thought to be a great leader with the early Orioles Camden Yards teams was Rick Sutcliffe. Unfortunately, he was a terrible pitcher. By that time, he had ERA over 5 in consecutive years and somehow, maintained his position at a time when that had never happened before. It happened like 3 times in the history of baseball. And the times that it happened had been right around 1930 when hitting was the absolute peak that it's ever been. So it's something that's very important in sports in general, is to make sure that the players who are leading are your best players. And so I don't think that's really going to be a problem with Starks, because I think he'll do very well in the free safety only specialty that the Ravens want him in here. That doesn't mean he can never be brought to the line of scrimmage to rush the passer, but I expect it to happen about as often as they did it with Marcus Williams, who was effective when he did it. He'd come in off the edge, Ed Reed-esque way, creep up and crawl in quickly on a run play to stop it from the edge, running quickly. He can creep up to the line of scrimmage and rush the passer occasionally. That's fine. I don't expect him to be used in any sort of Kyle Hamilton-esque role that all of a sudden he's covering a tight end in the slot or covering a wide receiver in the slot just because they want to demonstrate some form of versatility. The Ravens lack the single field instincts guy, the single field and the half field guys they need. Now, Hamilton could do either, but they don't want to limit Hamilton to that. Hamilton has a lot more value near the line of scrimmage than Starks would. So I think that they want to maintain that, and they need to find a second guy who can play a half field role. They're looking at Sanusi Kane right now. That may or may not work out. Bo Braid will get a chance there this summer. That may or may not work out. The Ravens may again head to the street.
You ever have one of those days where everything's off? Well, Mood can help with that. And let me tell you about Mood. It's the online cannabis brand that is changing the way we handle everything from stress to sleepless nights with functional gummies that are 100% federally legal cannabis. Mood launched to make cannabis affordable, accessible, and transparent, while at the same time supporting American farmers growing premium hemp on small pesticide-free farms. Their gummies are next level. Seriously, I've tried a few and each one feels totally different. The Sleepy Time gummies, out like a light, immediately asleep. The Epic Euphoria, it's perfect when you just need a reset to feel good again. What makes them unique? Mood combines THC with herbs and adaptogens, so you get real targeted effects. You're not going to find this in your typical dispensary. And here's the best part. Mood ships discreetly to most states, offers a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, and right now you get 20% off your first order with the promo code RAVEN. Just head to mood.com, find your perfect gummy, and use the code RAVENS at checkout to save 20%.
Rose is your name, but when you poop, it sure don't smell like roses. You're number two, burns the hair in my nose. But we fought hand in paw, now your poop don't stink at all. Now that the air is clear, I'll treasure your front and rear, my sweet rose.
Instantly neutralize poop stink with Poop Fighter from World's Best Cat Litter for the world's best cat.
To find that before the season starts, because if they don't, they'll have lost a lot of the versatility of Kyle Hamilton. So I think they really need four guys who can kind of play the back end, but they certainly need a third, and they don't have that obviously on the team right now. I'm not giving Sanusi Kane the benefit of the doubt, I realize, in making that statement, but it still could come back. So all of that magnifies the need for Malachi Starks to be a healthy and productive free safety for this team, because the team doesn't have anyone else to play that role without having to use the one trump card the team has in Hamilton to move him to that spot. So it might happen at some point. Malachi Starks might miss time with an injury, but you certainly hope it doesn't happen. And he has a good record of being healthy at Georgia. So that's good. Just to talk a little bit about last year and some of his testing as well. He has lousy shuttle testing, the vertical and the three cone. So the change of direction skills were not there. And it's interesting that a guy like that, they'd be trying out at slot corner. So I don't know exactly what Georgia's situation was, whether they lost a slot corner or Malachi Starks was just their best athlete. There's all sorts of plays on the football that Malachi Starks makes that you can see on tape that are very impressive, but he doesn't seem to have the base metrics that you would expect of a slot corner. And he did get beat some from that position when he's in the game against Texas in particular. They hit him up for 8 targets for 136. And he had some other bad games as well. And career for the year, he had 8.9 yards per target allowed, which is very high for a draftable player. It's just not what you like to see. There was a safety at 10 last year over 10, but it's highly atypical, in particular for the cornerback spots, including slot corners. You typically would see a guy who's in the sixes or even lower. TJ Tampa was at 4.9 in his last year at Iowa State. Wiggins was something like 5 or a little bit less also in his last year at Clemson. So, you know, the top corners and for that matter, the top safeties are going to be maybe a little bit higher sometimes because they tend to give up. They tend to play in a position where a catch involves a longer throw. They also have a lower catch rate against them. But they tend to maybe give up a slightly more, but still not 8.9 yards per target. 99.6 opposition passer rating last year. Career 92.6. Career 8.7 yards per target. He did have a better sophomore season than his junior year. But, you know, for all of the things that are great about Malachi Starks as a processor in the classroom, knowing where he needs to be on the field, there are question marks about whether or not he will be an ideal player for the NFL. I think he would have made an excellent second round pick. The Ravens got him in the first round, and they got Mike Green, who would have been an excellent first round pick in the second round. So I'm happy with the Ravens draft either way. But Malachi Starks, I think overabundant enthusiasm is not yet due. Let's be hopeful. And let's see, you know, let's hope it works out. I'll be watching very closely in camp to make sure he's in the right position. Coach speak on him has been terrific so far. Harbaugh really feels like he's not been in the wrong position so far. That's very good. You know, everybody else has very nice things to say about him. He's extremely impressive, like I said, himself at the podium. He brings good speed to the safety position, where his speed at the corner position is a little bit below the line. Not terribly so, but a little bit below the line. The 4.5 to 4.59 area of the curve, which is the Starks to Tampa side of the scale, is where the inflection point is for corners, where you can't live with their speed all of a sudden as they get each 0.01 higher into the in their 40 time in terms of what you can expect out of results out of that player at the NFL level. So Starks is, I think he's at the right position at safety, and hopefully he'll do very well. Ball skills are apparent. He had 6 interceptions and 17 other passes defense in 1,490 college coverage snaps. That's certainly excellent. So has a good record of finding and tracking the ball well in the air. Now, if that sort of player is in position on the back end of brackets regularly, he'll have a lot of success, and he is a loose bracket player. So a guy who can play a loose bracket anyway, does not always feel the Deshaun Elliott need to go to the midsection of the opposing receiver to try and dislodge the football, but plays for the overthrow a little bit. And as I've mentioned, that's an Ed Reed characteristic. If you look at his frame and his size at 6'1", 192, he's often not thought of as a guy who's obviously going to be a great tackler in the NFL, but looking at his play at Georgia, that's never been a problem. He's always been an outstanding tackler. So that's some good tonic for not being, you know, the prototypical size for the position, is that he's always been a good tackler in the past. So that's good to see. And hopefully that will continue. The Ravens need him at free safety, not anywhere else. So if strong safety might be a more normal position for him, I don't think that has to be, by the way. He may be a little bit of a project there because his total experience playing free safety is really not as much as some draftees would have. It's more than Amunwori. Amunwori, as you folks will probably remember, is the player I really coveted in that draft. And I think if I would be honestly a little bit happier if it was Amunwori and Green than Starks and Green. But I know every other national pundit seemingly disagrees with me on this thing. But the basic is this, that Amunwori does not know how to play safety yet. Starks knows more about how to play safety. He's actually a more polished safety than Amunwori by a good bit. But Amunwori's results at the college level are outstanding. He may do with being an unpolished safety and you know, produced a 37.1 opposition passer. I think it was 37.1, but it's under 39.6, which is incomplete. Every single play gets you to 39.6. So Amunwori, I think probably a better pickup for Seattle, and I'm sure McDonald will use him very well in that role. All right, let's see. What else is there to say? Starks has looked terrific in camp. There hasn't been anything that in terms of what I've seen from OTAs, that I would say, boy, Malachi Starks isn't doing this. I have bridled enthusiasm about his play. I am hopeful that he's going to be outstanding. All right, so now let's talk about what a good and a great season is for Malachi. A good season, I think he's active every week. He's healthy and he plays at least 14 games. He's active every week that he is healthy. Let me be clear about that. And then he plays at least 14 games. His quickness translates to the NFL game. And there I'm largely talking about his instincts being perfect for the safety position. You can be safety. You can be slower at safety, be 0.15 seconds slower on the 40. But if your instincts are good, you make up for that in spades in terms of play speed. And so that's somewhere where I think that, he will likely be fine. He seamlessly takes the starting free safety role by reading the QB well, holding up as the last line of defense as a tackler, and reducing the space between level two and level three with inside linebackers to dissuade some of those throws. Very important. That was something that did not work for the Ravens last year. They allowed a lot of throws between level two and level three that were complete. Frankly, the team left Roquan Smith hanging out to dry with two safeties who didn't know how to close that space down in Jackson and Williams. And it wasn't until week 11, I guess it was, after that second win over the Bengals when they gave up a lot of passing yardage, that they finally Roquan's play improved with Hamilton and Ardarius Washington on the back end. So that was a big change for the Ravens overall. And it really kind of was immediately apparent. I know things have been said by Marcus Williams the last day or two, and Doug Mallory may not have been a great coach, and that may have caused some problems. They've also cleaned house there and got Pagano in now to hopefully make sure that those groups are working together at safety and inside linebacker. It's possible some of this was not Williams' fault. It's just very damning that as soon as he and Jackson were sat down, the team went from worst to first in terms of their pass coverage results. So I do expect that they're going to be able to get a player like Starks, who's reading that game from the back forward, and he's said some very impressive things about how he does that, to do it the way they want him to do it, to close down those space when it's the necessary to do so, and also be on the back end, not be caught in no man's land when a corner has a responsibility that he can't possibly trail deep. So obviously the Ravens had a lot of problems with Jamar Chase last year, particularly getting deep on Brandon Stevens. You don't want that to happen. So Malachi's got to be responsible for that. He's got to also take away some space on those throws that are over the linebackers. Okay, the last thing is that his play is at the league average or a little better. I don't want the moon out of Malachi Starks as a rookie. I want if he were a little better than the league average, I'd be very excited about that, because I think the runway would be there for him to grow to be one of the best safeties in the league. Let's go back 3 years now to Kyle Hamilton's rookie year, and you remember all the problems he had to start off the year, the missed coverage in the Miami game, where it was actually Marcus Williams who picked him up on that, and it still ended up being a touchdown because Marcus was late getting there, but Kyle Hamilton was in the wrong place. Marcus Williams was clearly upset about it. And, the Ravens need Malachi Starks to adapt very quickly to that free safety role. If he does, and he's a league average or a little bit better, sky's the limit. I mean, he doesn't have to be Derwin James. He doesn't have to be all pro as a rookie. He really doesn't need any of those postseason accolades of any sort to come this year. I think they may very well come in the future. He's in an extremely good position with the system and the players around him on defense to excel. It wouldn't surprise me if he did a little bit better than that, but the 60th percentile being at or a little bit above the league average, I think would be terrific for him. In a great season, I think he plays 15-plus games. I think the ball skills show up with 3 to 4 interceptions. Now, he may have interceptions with a good year as well. I'm not going to say one way or the other, but I think we'll see real ball skills on display. We'll see the loose bracketing on display. We'll see, some judgment in terms of go for the overthrow, go for the hit, go for the catch point to try and knock a ball loose. I think he'll play bigger than his size, even at the NFL level. He certainly did at Georgia. So that's something to hope for. I think he'll mesh naturally with both Hamilton and whoever else is in that split field role, if Hamilton is used elsewhere, or they want to get that versatility unlocked, or Hamilton's hurt for that matter, that he meshes well with whoever else is playing on the back end. And just I think the biggest thing I can give him at an 80th percentile season is that the play in 2025 alone justifies the draft pick without the need to project further growth. So that would honestly be a season significantly above the league average. So a league average season or a little bit higher, I would project a lot of future growth on a player like Malachi Starks. On a player, if he were to play significantly above the league average as a rookie, and we already know, well, this draft pick worked out, no doubt about it, that's an even better spot to be in, where you don't have to, he doesn't have to grow a lot in year two for you to still be happy that you drafted him number 27. So I know a lot of people love him, and I'm more excited than I was on draft night with the pick based on hearing him. I understand now more why the Ravens liked him so much. I still want to see some of that on the field, and hopefully we do. Anyway, that's it for this episode. Really appreciate folks listening through the expectation series, all the great comments received. I like, it's one of the off-season series I love doing, particularly when I get to do it with other folks, and I usually try and hit up content creators that are around the league. I want you to do this. I want you to give me the one content creator you would love me to include in this who is not there currently, and I'll try and do that. So you know, there's a large number out there. There's people from television, people from radio. Jeff did one this year, which was good. He hadn't done a show previously, so that's nice. But there's lots of other people who you know, have not done it, and I have 30 of these shows. So it's one of the few series where I can hit on a lot of different content creators during the year. But anyway, please, if you've got an idea for somebody who ought to be invited on this show, I'd love to hear it. Thanks for all your listens, all the great support during the off season. We're about to kick it in this week into full gear. Probably by the time you hear this, we'll have already had the first camp reports out. I'm expecting this to come out in the first off day. That'll be in a few days coming up. But you'll have camp reports every day. And you'll have other shows like Friday Morning GM showing up as they regularly do. And then, of course, coming up on August 7th is that first preseason game, and we'll have full offense and defense reporting, particularly on the fringe of roster guys who don't have the team made, to see what we really have. So that series is something I enjoy doing every preseason, and I hope you guys enjoy it as well. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.